Welcome to the Beryl Institute's To Care Is Human podcast series. This is Humans in Healthcare, stories from the front lines of healthcare.
And so if something happens, if someone dies, for example, I think there was, for me, this expectation that I would just like take that and just roll with it, because my relationship was not technically a personal one, even though it certainly had those kinds of qualities in some ways.
This is Humans in Healthcare, where we examine the Beryl Institute's 8 strategic lenses of the experience framework through the eyes of those delivering and receiving care. By hearing stories from the front lines, we elevate the human experience in healthcare.
I'm Tiffany Christensen, Vice President of Experience Innovation at the Beryl Institute. I had the pleasure of sitting down with Allison Christensen, no relation, different spelling, to discuss her experiences working as an occupational therapist who found herself suffering from burnout. Today's conversation explores the staff and provider lens of the 8 strategic lenses within the experience framework. I wanted to know what Allison felt was the root cause of her getting to a place where she felt so burned out, she chose to change her career path altogether.
I was a lymphedema therapist working with people on like post-surgical swelling. I would form really deep relationships with people, and I would see them for long periods of time, 5 days a week, for 2 weeks, 4 weeks, sometimes months, and got to know what the unique challenges were that they were having about facing illness. To move from someone who was perhaps working and raising a family to someone who's now just primarily existing and dealing with illness. Those are all really significant questions, I think, that as healthcare professionals, we don't think about a lot until we're in those circumstances. One particular patient that I thought about recently was a younger woman who was probably in her early to mid-30s. And she came to see me probably for 3 different courses of treatment. She had breast cancer. And she had a 2-year-old daughter. And she would come in 5 days a week to see me. And we would just have, you know, normal conversation like you would have with anyone who is an acquaintance and you form a quick bond with and get along very well and talk about, you know, all kinds of things. She did quite well with me for the 2 courses of treatment I saw her. And then she came back because she'd had a recurrence of her cancer. So we really, me, I really thought that when I discharged her for the last time, that this meant that her life was going to go back to normal. I think probably it's safe to say we both thought that. She came back to me probably a year later after having had a recurrence. And any type of breast cancer recurrence is usually very significant because it metastasizes to the bone and to the spinal cord, to the brain. Those are common areas where it metastasizes. And that was, in fact, the case for her. So she and I spent some more time together, and then I had to let her go so that she could focus her efforts on other kinds of treatment, radiation and other things. So I didn't see her again. And I remember from time to time thinking about her and wondering how she was doing and how she was with her daughter in particular. And I had this fear about calling, that I would have to talk to someone at her house and that I would perhaps be asking a difficult question about how she was, and maybe she wasn't around anymore. And I felt afraid and awkward about that. So I just didn't do it. And one day my boss came up to me and mentioned to me that she had passed away because they were friends outside of this work setting. And I remember feeling, when I heard that news, this sort of like drop into my belly, just when you get the shock of some kind of news that you're not ready for, even though you know it might be coming. And he was standing there with me and just looking for my reaction. And I looked at him and I said, oh, well, I feel like I brushed it off, like, oh, I guess we knew that was coming or something like that. And when I look back on it now, it almost seems flip to say something like that. And then I think my pager went off and I left and I went and worked with my next patient. And looking back on that now, it's kind of shocking just to think of my own reaction and that I acknowledge this relationship as significant, and that was the way that I chose to acknowledge the loss.
Well, is it the way that you chose to acknowledge the loss, or was it the way that you were trained to acknowledge the loss?
Well, I would say there's no training either way. For me, at the time, there was no real conversation about how to manage or navigate loss like that. And I think I said the word acknowledge because I think that for me is a key part. I think there's some expectation among us that this is part of the job, and that in framing it that way, that we somehow make it less significant, right? But it is in fact very significant. And without acknowledging that, then there's a secondary loss, which is appreciating the value of that relationship in my own life, right? So what I realized as I went through my career is that each one of those encounters I had, I carried a piece of that with me. And I lost patients along the way, you know, people who passed away or became more sick or moved on to other facilities for whatever reason. And I don't think that I ever really mourned those losses. There's sort of this unspoken boundary that exists between a professional and a patient. Sort of, I'm on this side of the boundary and you're on that side. And so if something happens, if someone dies, for example, I think there was, for me, this expectation that I would just like take that and just roll with it, because my relationship was not technically a personal one, even though it certainly had those kinds of qualities in some ways.
What Allison was describing certainly sounded like burnout to me. The three primary symptoms, of course, being emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, and a feeling of not being effective in your professional role. So how did Allison define, to herself, all of these challenging feelings that she was dealing with at work?
I think I probably called it exhaustion. I remember feeling very isolated, like that there was no one that could possibly understand how I was managing it, how I was dealing with it. I do feel that there was some bleed over into my personal life. In fact, for many years, I came home every Friday at 2 o'clock and I slept for 2 hours for years. And I kind of regarded that as just like, oh, ha, 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 Allison's nap time. But I think that my body was, and my mind were so exhausted that was how I coped.
You work now in the space of patient experience. So what's the next step, do you think, for those who might be in your position or where you were a few years ago?
Well, luckily, I think there is a lot more conversation now around burnout and joy in work. And I think that's always a valuable thing because it's so important that people, number one, have the space to process and talk about their experiences and normalize those things. Because, you know, getting out of this space of, you know, being tough or being strong and sort of being able to just keep rolling with the punches, I think is really critical, not just for the practitioner, but for the patients and families, because they can obviously tell when we're worn down and we're not functioning at our best. You know, on a more systemic level, I think we talk about burnout in healthcare and how much of a significant problem that is. And I think where we're missing the boat is really getting a clear picture on what the burnout is like in healthcare, because so much of the focus is on physicians and their experiences, maybe to a lesser extent nurses as well. And we don't hear as much about other professionals, the social workers, the case managers, the chaplains, the environmental services, the physical therapy, occupational therapy, all the people who go together to create a team that helps a patient get from the point of perhaps acute illness into, you know, whatever their new life is going to be after that. So if we really want to understand what is happening in healthcare, then we have to understand what's happening with all of the people who are part of that picture. So my hope is that we can expand the conversation, we can invite other people to the table, we can understand that their experiences are different, perhaps, of burnout or compassion fatigue or whatever, however you want to refer to it, but no less important.
Well, my understanding is that you've done some research, some mining, if you will, among your colleagues in PT, speech, and OT around how they frame their experiences in the context of burnout. Do you want to share a little bit about that?
Sure. So I just did a kind of an informal 3-question survey and aimed it, as you said, at physical occupational speech therapists, just because that's my really frame of reference. And I was interested in their experience in particular. So I asked them what things most impacted their job satisfaction, just trying to keep it open and keep the terminology simple so that we're not directing people toward burnout if they don't have that. And the primary things that came through were really the administrative burdens I talked about later, this inability to go to bat for the patients that they are tasked with caring for. So whether that be insurance regulation or whether that be leadership saying our priorities are elsewhere or this costs too much money, these are all things that people are feeling. Certainly documentation, not a surprise that people feel like that is taking up way too much time and taking them away from what they care about. The other thing that comes through is productivity. And I think almost everybody, at least on the clinical side, is feeling the crush of productivity, which is all about how many billable units do I get in the time that I'm at work? And there are typically some minimum standards out there for people. So you're talking about anywhere from 70% to 85% that I should be spending that time directly in patient care. And that's a very difficult thing to accomplish. And I think squeezes people in terms of feeling like they're ethically having to do something wrong to meet those standards. My hope is that as we learn more about that and as we start to see more positive results of things like narrative medicine, which is bringing a study of literature into medical settings so that we can look at poetry or essays or even pieces of novels or what have you. And we can learn a lot about the human experience from that. We can learn a lot about how you might read something differently than I read it, how to mine a story, like what can we glean from this and what also do we not know that could help us in our interactions with patients and with each other. I think looking at things like theater improv and mindfulness, which can be very helpful for us when we are trying to navigate unpredictable situations, which almost everything in healthcare has an element of unpredictability, right? So my hope is that we're going to start seeing more of that expanding out into arenas for other professionals.
I admire Allison for her honesty and her focus in helping healthcare professionals of all kinds name their experience while recognizing they're not alone. As we dive deeper into the lens of staff and provider engagement, we can feel some hope that the epidemic of burnout is more widely recognized now than it was just a few years ago, and there are creative approaches to humanizing healthcare. For more of Allison's perspective, you can read her blog entry at theberylinstitute.org. And for more information about burnout, visit theberylinstitute.org and consider starting with the white paper entitled An Invisible Barrier to Compassionate Care. Thank you to Allison and to all the brave healthcare professionals who choose to tell their story so that the staff and clinician experience can improve across the continuum of care.
Thank you for listening. This has been Humans in Healthcare, a part of the Beryl Institute's To Care is Human podcast series, where we seek to elevate the human experience by understanding the lived experience of those receiving and delivering care. Please subscribe, share, and review this podcast series. Stay connected to the patient experience community by never missing an episode. On Twitter at Beryl Institute or theberylinstitute.org.